in 1973, Uncle George picked up his first comic book from the spinning rack at the corner convenience store in his neighborhood. In 1993, Epic Boss McFall walked into his first comic shop and bought his first graphic novel. In the early 2010s, both men were imprisoned in the New 52, a maximum security universe neither of them asked for. Somewhere around 2015, they escaped. And now we're a podcast comparing the old school with the new guard. If you can find them, which is really easy, you might listen to Panel by Panel.
Welcome to Panel by Panel, where we talk about stories that have happened already. If you want to catch the newest and latest, greatest news, well, that's not here. Here we're going to talk about the story arcs and the artists and everything that has changed the way Marvel works and resonates today with everything that you read. I'm Charles. Along with me is the esteemed colleague and in-house resident expert, Uncle George.
Good morning or afternoon or evening, whenever you're listening to this.
So the idea, we're obviously still early on in the stage, we're getting the pitch as a word down, but the idea is we both are longtime comic fans. I started in the mid-90s, I've read some through the 2000s, I'm getting back into a lot of the new stuff now. Uncle George started in the early 70s and 80s, and while he's touched on some other stuff, he really used to remember the effect these things had on you when you were growing up reading them. And that to me is the key to the whole show, is all about the experience and what we went through when we first read this.
Yeah, that's for sure. In fact, trying to sort my comics between the ones I'm keeping and the ones I'm selling.
Oh, that's always hard,
right? It's like, did this have an impact on me? Yes, I'm keeping it. Do I even remember reading this one? No, it's going.
I kind of picture your wife looking at this massive box of comics. And you're like, you didn't do anything. It's like, I took that one out. That's why I like the digital. I understand collectors out there with the hard copies. I understand, because I've read many, many hard copies, that it is a different experience. Holding it in your hands, just physically, knowing that you have to go find the next one or, you know, those kind of things, it does add to experience, but I don't have to carry big, massive boxes of comics around with me when I move. So, you know, I like having it at my fingertips, as it were.
Yeah, pros and cons to both.
Yeah. So this episode, we are talking about the War of Kings. And again, a story arc I was not familiar with and not heard of until you mentioned, hey, this would be a good one for us to look at.
Right. I remember you mentioning you wanted to read something about the Inhumans. And I remember that being advertised a couple years back as something that I had an interest in looking at, but never did pick up.
And that made it perfect. So we both sought out something that looked interesting. And man, this thing got massive fast.
Yeah.
So the quick breakdown of just the runs, the story runs, and there's so many other players that we're going to break down next in this thing before we even get into the story. But if you're going to read it as its entirety, there's a bunch of crossovers with it. So it starts off, with the Guardians of the Galaxy, I believe, is one of the earliest issues. And then that plays into the actual War of Kings hardcore run. There's a secondary War of Kings, I believe, as well. Then there's Nova, the issues of Nova. And the Inhumans has a few runs in there. And then if you're on digital like I was on the Marvel Unlimited app, there are digital exclusives which really just give you more insight behind the characters. Now, I did read all of it. And, George, you said you read the main War of Kings.
Right, I read the Backbone miniseries, the 6-issue
series. So that's how we're going to approach it. Now let's see if we can break down the major players. So this essentially starts off right after the Secret War.
The
Secret Invasion that the Inhumans launch from the planet and go after and destroy a lot of Skrulls.
I did read The Secret Invasion at the time that came out, and I was aware that it would lead into a new series detailing the impact to the Inhumans, since Black Bolt had been impersonated by a Skrull for apparently a few years, and that and other events made the Inhumans decide that they were going to take off from Earth and embrace their destiny as the protectors of the Kree.
It's crazy. Their whole city flies.
Yes.
Which, if that is not the most epic and at the same time basic comic principle ever.
Yeah.
It's like, well, how are we going to get there? Just hit the launch button and the whole city goes, you know. It was great. And to see, I honestly don't know why I have such bright, colorful memories of comics. Again, I started in the 90s. I started with, if I get the names wrong, I apologize, but I think it's Jim Scott's X-Men.
Jim Lee and X-Men. Scott Lobdell was the writer.
There we go. Okay, so, oh, it's kind of a Jim Scott if they were dating.
They're amalgamating them. That's okay.
So Jim Lee. But that's the X-Men I started with. So the colors were a bit brighter. The storylines weren't nearly as dark as some of the stuff before and after. And, of course, the cartoon I watched as a kid, The Amazing X-Men. I can't remember. The one in the 90s that everybody heralds is one of the best X-Men cartoons that came out. I just have these happy, bright memories. And as an adult, and I'm reading the Dark Phoenix saga and how they talked and did things. And I'm reading, we talked about Meltdown and the Walt Simonson Thor run and some of the darkness there. And now I'm in War of Kings. And I'm like, holy crap. There's like never a peaceful moment in comic book world.
No, there's always tragedy going on.
Always. And maybe I was just sheltered from some of it. I don't know, because there's a lot of murder and death by the heroes.
Yeah.
You know, and in this particular case, the city takes off chasing the fleeing Skrulls and with a whisper destroys the crap out. I mean, just, you know, what is a Marvin the Martian would say, myrtleizes them.
Yeah.
So that was fairly epic. And then it just scales from there. So why don't you take the lead and I'll fill in some of the surrounding happenings.
Okay, so the 6-issue miniseries starts off with Vulcan, who I have learned recently is the third Summers brother.
Right, now, I don't know, and you can tell me if it is or not. I can't remember if it's in the Backbone or if it comes out in some of the side crossover stories, but it turns out Vulcan was around right before the House of M storyline.
I think so. I never did pick up this run of X-Men, but I do remember that there was a major war that the X-Men were involved in involving the Shi'ar, or Shi'ar, I can never remember how to pronounce it. And I was aware that there was an emperor of the Shi'ar Empire named Vulcan, but it wasn't until recently that I found out he was the Summers brother I didn't even know existed.
You're the brother we never wanted. That's awesome.
That's what he's made himself out to be.
Just about, and we'll get into some of how they tell his backstory mm-hmm. as we go along. So it definitely starts off with Vulcan, and I don't honestly remember what he's doing at the time.
Yeah.
Is he just being the little galactic Hitler and trying to take over everything?
He is essentially being that. He just wants to expand the Shi'ar Empire to the limits of the galaxy. So he wants to rule from one end to the other. And the Kree are more or less in his way. So his first order of business is to destroy the Kree Empire.
So he starts on the outer fringes. And somewhere along the way in the Backbone part of it, Havoc gets involved, who is his brother. Actually, I think he has Havoc imprisoned to start this whole storyline out. He's imprisoned below an ocean, so he can't gather galactic power.
That was probably in one of the prologue issues that I hadn't read.
Yeah, there's... Man, it gets so big so fast.
The story starts off with a bang with the ship, the Star Jammer, on board which are the Star Jammers, including Havoc and Polaris, Rachel Summers.
Who I obviously from the name assume it's Scott's daughter, but I'm still hazy on that background.
I believe it's Scott and Jean's daughter from an alternate timeline.
Yeah, like she appeared after House of M or something along those lines. Yeah. So House of M seemed to be, from what I've read House of M, I really enjoyed that story. But now that I'm reading some storylines past that, it seemed to be that semi-clean slate that we can go back and redefine kind of where we want to go without having to retcon a whole bunch of storylines for a whole bunch of fans. We just kind of hit a soft reset with this story. And now we can kind of branch off into what we want to do,
right.
Which was fine. So she's part of that. Mm-hmm. And she has the Phoenix power for at least half of this run.
Apparently, Jean still had the Phoenix power when she became pregnant with Rachel, and however that alternate future went, eventually Rachel ended up with it.
Yes. And so if you didn't read the prologue, then you missed the epic battle inside of a prison with Vulcan and his evildoers, as they were. Because he went to the Shi'ar prison and pulled out the worst of the worst to be his honor guard. Essentially, it's basically a symbiote. That's Psycho. It's, what is the dude's name that is the last of his kind that's the Shi'ar protector of the Emperor? He's the guardian of Gladiator, yes. He apparently has a cousin that was supposed to be dead, but she was not dead. She was somehow imprisoned.
Okay.
So she becomes part of this honor guard. And then there's, immediately they pull out this radioactive guy who's in a suit. And all he does is want to watch the universe burn. And like, he lasts for an episode. And even the bad guy's like, "You're too crazy, man. You gotta, we just left him behind." You know, he was burning some planet. Like, "Yeah, we gotta go. Sorry. See ya."
Okay, that helps fill in the gap because it's like I said, the Star Jammer is the first thing you see, the spaceship, as it tries to escape the Shi'ar fleet and reach the border of the Kree Empire.
Yeah, so leading up to it, it starts off with Havoc somehow being imprisoned by Vulcan, and he's kept underwater, not physically, but the prison's buried deep underwater to dilute the cosmic power because, as we know, he attracts cosmic power. That's where he builds up his strength from and those kind of things. And slowly, there's like a slight, tiny crack, slow leak in this thing, so water starts dripping. And since water can get through, cosmic power can get through. And so he spends months basically charging up. And the Star Jammers, there's him and Polaris, I think, are stuck or imprisoned. And then the other Star Jammers break in to get them free. And about the time they're getting free, here comes Vulcan and his crew. And it's this great epic battle that the Star Jammers have to run from because there was just no, I mean, throughout this whole thing, there is no defeating Vulcan. There's no standing up to him. He's just the most epic of bad guys in this case. Yeah. And he's psycho as crap. What you picked up on was right after that fight, they snuck into like the underside of a Shi'ar ship, I think it was, and stuck there for a while until they could break free. They pulled the old Millennial Falcon hiding under their Star Destroyer or whatever it was trick.
Uh-huh.
So then they start taking off and going. And do they have a Londra with them?
They do.
Okay. So, yes, I forget exactly where she picked up, but she's been deposed as the Empress of the Shi'ar Empire previously before the story. And Vulcan is the Emperor. So the Starjammers are trying to get her back to the planet to retake control of the Empire and stop Vulcan politically.
And so Vulcan has his fleets attack the Kree homeworld where the Inhumans now reside. And, of course, they say, we're not going to stand for this. So they make their own plans to retaliate. And the Starjammers do their own form of retaliation. Madness ensues.
Chaos, pretty much. Yeah. Now, some of the subtleties to that were the Inhumans land on the Kree planet and essentially just take over.
Mm-hmm.
And Ronan, somewhere before all this happened, Ronan had been promised to be married to Crystal.
In order to consolidate the union between the Inhumans and the Kree.
So that basically comes into play right now. You know, we're going to take over this planet and you're going to help us consolidate power. And Crystal, which I wasn't exactly sure. So I definitely want to read more Inhuman beyond this because they were obviously setting up further timelines, but they're having to deal with some terrorism on the planet, some Kree terrorism, resistance and whatnot. But at the same time, Crystal is the voice of reason in all of this story.
Yes.
She's the one saying we have to help the people transition. She's trying to stop what ultimately ends up being the end result of this whole war. And different things going on, but Ronan ends up getting like thrashed by Vulcan. I mean, he goes head to head.
Gladiator, actually.
Was it Gladiator? Okay. So, yeah, Gladiator promptly handed him his hammer back to him. And so that did
Jesus
not go
out of him.
Yeah, it did. But, I was thinking, that's a little odd because every, in fact, on the Guardians of the Galaxy side, this story starts out with Peter Quill sneaking into the Kree Empire to try to find some information on Skrulls, or he's doing something, because previously on Guardians of the Galaxy, they had just discovered Skrulls as well. It is a parallel to the Secret Invasion story going on Earth. And so Peter Quills is on the Kree planet and gets captured by Ronan, who is just this massive badass. Yeah. And Ronan essentially throws him into hell. He throws him into the null void, into the planet that holds the prison that's in the null void. And Blastar, I thought he was going to have a bigger picture, but Blastar is the king of the null void now. And that it plays out very interestingly as well.
When you say null void, really, are you referring to the negative zone?
Probably. Okay.
Just to help me clarify.
Thank you. So, okay, so let's backtrack a little bit. The prison that, depending on which canon you read, Reed Richards or Hank Pym built, that's in a different alternate universe that you can't get out of. Is that the negative zone?
Yeah.
Okay, so somehow Ronan has access to that, but not to the prison, but to the negative zone itself in that specific planet. So he just throws Peter Quill in there, goes, you know what? I didn't need you out of my hair. I got plans. And he threw him into this. And I thought it was going to be a bigger story, and it ended up really not mattering a whole lot, other than in the Guardian storyline or Nova storyline, but not so much to the War of Kings. Right. But that
barely
led to...
touched upon in the miniseries.
Yeah. So that definitely led to the Inhumans partnering with the Kree. And this is where I found out that Terrigen Mist does not affect the Kree at all. The stuff that they used on the humans to make them inhuman does not work on Kree. And that becomes a bigger point later on.
Yeah, somewhere in Marvel history was established that the Kree have reached the end of their evolutionary potential, that they can no longer evolve or mutate into newer, better forms.
Which is interesting, because part of the promise here by Black Bolt is to find ways around that, to try to help the Kree evolve into a better future.
Right.
Of some sort. So this is where you get a good taste of Maximus the Mad and all of his inventions. Mm-hmm. So as Vulcan's storming across the front, the other big part of this story, oh, that's the other thing. There's a special run called, wasn't Starhawk. Starhawk is a character that comes from the future for the Guardians, and that plays in a little bit. It was these, was this in the Backbone? Vulcan ends up running into these Guardians, not the Guardians the of the Galaxy, but yeah, the Raptors.
One
Thank
of which
you.
Was, there was a run of a comic in the 90s called Darkhawk.
It's yes.
Related yes, to him. this group.
Yeah. So as all these, it was recently, so since I've been picking this up, it's been my first real taste of universal politics, where you see how all these little pieces play in.
Yeah.
It very much felt like a much better episode of Star Trek than Star Trek ever did. You know, with the warring races and all the politics you have to understand and the histories that play into it.
Yeah, they packed an amazing amount of complexity into the six issues that I read.
Which, at this point, we're going to have to stop here because we just got a more story and more of this to go on. So we're going to do a part two, but I promise we won't drag it out beyond that, unless we do. But I don't think we're going to drag it out too much more. I think one more episode on this, we'll wrap it up. Then you just need to go read it. You just need to go read it. And so we're going to help you with that. Thanks to Mike Woodard, who is the producer, editor of the show, does the voiceover work and all the music that goes with it. Big thanks again. I forgot before, but thanks to The Beginning at Last for providing Wreck This Place for our outro song. We love those guys. They're really awesome. I can be found on Facebook at House of the Bear. I make regular appearances because I'm there all the time because I'm the host. But I'm on From the Helicarrier at thehelicarrier.com, where you can find this show and many others, also in the Helicarrier Network. And Uncle George, you definitely make appearances time to time on From the Helicarrier.
I climb aboard whenever I can.
Whenever you can, we love having you. So check out our show and all the other great shows in the Helicarrier Network. As we do more of these and get more things established, we'll have our own fan page and there'll be some other things to tell you. But until then, you can always find us on thehelicarrier.com. Get to reading, and thanks for listening.
See you in the funny pages.
I took a line out of Pac's book, out of the M's book. Put on my dress shit and found out who I was. Tearing the roof off and I'm the bull god. Mushing a nookie and growing a mohawk. I wrote raps at first but still headbanged a mud vein. Hollow point on weekdays, weekends I rock stain. Crowd served at Teptones, fought dudes at my home. Drove up and got stoned, fuck chips I'm not known. I never given a fuck about what people thought or what they said about me. I am me and every one of them. See what happens to fake friends who doubt me. I'm on stage with Tech 9, Hops in the night.